when I arrived in Australia in 1951. I worked and then earned quite good money. Traveled the country a lot too in that process because I worked for Mac Roberts and Millen Airlines and a few other people who required a lot of work to be done in the bush. So I started to see the country from a very early age, a very early stage, sorry, in my life. And that also, of course, was what intrigued me because I'd never seen anything quite like that before. When you come from Holland, where I came from, which is flat and very well delineated everything, it's quite interesting, of course, to see the enormous space and of natural landscape, you know. So
there would have been even less stuff going on in WA in the 1950s.
That's right. Yes, I mean, only
no gas processing plants, for example.
None of that. Nothing. None of anything. Not Ord River Dam. Not Perth that only had 350,000 people, and I think the whole of West Australia used to have over 500,000 around that amount, you know.
Amazing, yeah.
But so when I went back to Europe, even by ship, and I bought a camera, that's the first really, and I became interested in photography because I saw the potential as against, I've always wanted to be a landscape painter, but there is something about the camera that can be used as a creative tool. And it was quite interesting. The article in the West Australian says using the camera as a brush. Well, there are possibilities that the tool you use is only one aspect of your creative sense. You know, you've got to have an idea what you're going to do with it, whether it's a pencil or whether it is a camera or whatever. So you must allow yourself to be or to explore your own potential before you even start doing anything, you know. So the camera was then, and when I went through Europe for half a year and photographed all sorts of things, when I came back, I knew then that that's what I was going to do. I was going to be a professional photographer.
And I do notice that there's an amazing sense of design in some of the landscape photos you've taken, aerial photography. Walking through the exhibition at the Perth Art Gallery, as I was just yesterday, one of the first things that struck me was a photograph of sheep tracks radiating out like spokes from a star in a star shape from a waterhole. And the sheep have obviously heavily eroded created tracks to the waterhole, heavily eroded the landscape. And this photograph and a few of the others made me think about the way in which there maybe is a bit of a kind of a tension going on. It's like you're almost aestheticizing degradation. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, you do. Because you don't ask any questions. When you fly over the country, you see a design feature, you see an element of something graphic coming out of the landscape that appeals to you. Now, it happens to be sheet track, but most of the time, there are islands in salt lakes or there are natural. And the proportion of the man-made landscapes or man-affected landscapes versus natural landscapes is about 70 to 30. So 70% of the natural landscapes and about 30% are man-made.
That's interesting. I think a lot of people will look at some of these photographs of salt lakes and maybe not really understanding how salinity works in Western Australia. Think, well, this is maybe another example of creating a saline landscape through chopping down all the trees. But no, they are actually natural, aren't they?
They are. There's several. There are one or two pictures where the farming has intruded what used to be a natural lake in the landscape and brought the salt level up and then killed the trees. But in most cases, in Western Australia, because of the rotation of the earth and our proximity to the ocean and the rotation of the earth, we have more salt lakes than we have more salt dumped on our landscape, on the Western Australia landscape, than in the east. So we have some fascinating salt lakes that have their own sort of unique pattern, depending on wind and water movement.
That's another thing that I really took away from visiting your exhibition yesterday, and whenever I've looked at your photographs in the past, Australia's pretty old. This comes across really well in your photography, and I suppose the salt lakes, they don't have any, these old river channels don't have anywhere to drain because the land's so flat. Yeah. They end up creating these inland little mini seas, these salt lakes. Then I was thinking about the fact that you are from Holland, and the old name of Australia was New Holland. Yeah. And it seems like such an irony.
Yes.
This is the real old Holland. This is the old country.
Yeah, this is geologically. The old Holland. Yeah, but certainly what you say, you know, we don't have huge rivers. We have a few quiet, Fitzroy in the Kimberley, where there is a higher rainfall. We've got some quite mighty rivers, but even they are more seasonal than anything else. But what I'm always impressed with is that the evolution of the landscape is always there. You know, it's adapting itself to the conditions that are in Australia. It's the amount of rainfall and temperature and fertility of the soil that produces those landscapes, whether they saltbush or spinifex or whatever, what grows out of there, it's been able to get hold of it, and it's done so for millions of years. And I find that quite interesting, quite touching. You know, we're such a small part of the world, really, and so late. We're latecomers, and it's been there so long, and probably we will, another million years, we won't even be there. But it will be there, so it's interesting.
Well, that's fascinating. That one of the things that does inspire you is our diminutive stature, humanity. So the other thing that struck me was you've got a photograph of some four-wheel drive tracks in a empty salt lake, and they're creating big big circles, which you can see from, you know, wherever you are, 1,000 meters up. As I mentioned to you off air, geoglyphs, things in you see them in England, the White Horse of Uffington, chalk white horses in the landscape, or in South America, the Nazca spider is another famous geoglyph. Designs you can see from very high up in the air. These are kind of the West Australia's geoglyphs, and that to me says a lot.
Yeah, I've got a book for sale which is part of the exhibition. There's a couple more in that, but yeah, if you see a salt lake and you see people have been running cars or motorcycles or whatever over that, and then their wheelies, whatever they found fun to do, obviously. The moment you get up, that becomes a very graphic statement, as where when you're looking along, you can only see they've been there, but you can't get the whole picture till you get up in the air. And as you say, from about 1,000 feet, it becomes a very prominent statement, particularly black marks on a white salt lake. Yes.
Another photograph that struck me was the photograph of the ant eating vegetation in the Pilbara.
Oh, yeah, that's in the Great Sandy Desert. When the landscape flattens out and there is a uniformity, these features stand out very well. The ants apparently clear the vegetation about the 4-meter diameter area, spinifex predominantly. They take it all in the ground, and there are no ant hills, there are only a few holes left. And their whole world is underground. I know very little about it, but one day I'll ask a question from somebody who knows. But they're also very territorial, and the spaces between these ant clearings is quite almost perfect, you know, because of they don't want to intrude in other areas.
And amazing,
very, very, very interesting there.
Well, we'll have to wrap it up, but just quickly, you have not only the current exhibition at the West Australian Art Gallery, which runs until when?
The West Australian is up till the 8th of November, so it's on for about 3 months.
Okay, actually. It's a long one. Yeah. But you also have another exhibition starting at the Holmes & Court Gallery, and that's on from the 28th of August to the 18th of October.
Yeah.
I think that's in East Perth, Level 1, 11 Brown Street, East Perth.
That's correct.